Sox Central Monday. It is Dan Riccio and Bick Nizar here in the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? And if you want to be a part of the program, you can. 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com.
Do they text that if they got some comments?
The comments are big. The questions or comments. With Satnod here on a maintenance day, yeah. I can use comments as much as I want.
Yeah, I'm not pro or against it. No. I'm fairly indifferent.
You're very on the fence?
With Satnod here, let's take advantage.
You're very pew suitor about this? Because he's Swiss.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
You got the joke? Okay.
I got it. It's very neutral.
All right. There's a lot to get into. And, it's the elephant in the room that the Canucks continue to take small bites out of. One benching at a time. Let's get to it. It's the open on Canucks Central.
Welcome to the open.
That's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
Yes, the open on Canucks Central, where we bring you the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. And the latest is Canucks had an off day after playing back-to-backs over the weekend. A 4-1 win with a couple of empty netters over the Chicago Blackhawks on Saturday and losing last night to, at the time, the worst team in the National Hockey League, the Nashville Predators, 5-3 in regulation. An empty netter made that a two-goal victory for the Preds. And I think the whole weekend, maybe the entire homestand, is part of the discussion here because it feels like a culmination of what ended up happening in the Nashville game, where as a whole, I don't feel the team played terribly. It was a fairly even game for me, despite what
last night.
Yeah. Last night's game was a fairly even game. Canucks maybe benefited from score effects in the third period as they racked up scoring chances, at least over at the analytics boards that you may look at. And while all that's well and good, this team, through the first 17 games, has not quite been good enough. And there's a lot of reasons for it. There's chemistry building, Pedersen's slow starts, JT Miller has been up and down while he's working through an injury, and then last night, he's having a real tough go about it and only sees two shifts in the third period, benched for the final 14-plus, and the coach afterwards says it's not injury-related. He went with the guys that he felt were going to help them tie the game, and that did not include JT Miller. A player that had more than 100 points last year, is one of the top 10, 15 scorers in the league since coming over to the Vancouver Canucks from the Tampa Bay Lightning. That player,
who's a point a game right now.
Well,
that, 16 and 17, but last night would be 16 and 16.
That player, in the coach's eyes, wasn't playing well enough to be able to help them get back in the game. And I get it. The coach frustrated with the play, frustrated with the team overall, JT not playing well, more than a few shifts you could look at last night to show and explain that. But ultimately, the coach is sending a big signal to his whole team. And one way you do that is you bench one of your star players.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because a lot of people texted it, and rightfully so, right? Like, Pedersen went through struggles. Why didn't he get benched? And I think the thing that stands out for me of why this is such a significant message, outside of just, hey, your contract, your status doesn't save you, your production doesn't save you. Because JT here recently, the raw numbers heading into last night's game were fine, like 7 points in 6 games, you think, all right, like, that's the guy we need to go get a goal at some point or engineer a scoring chance for us. And in the last 14 minutes, where were you? And how come the coach didn't rely on you? But it has had volatile games outside of just the team. Like JT Miller has had volatile games against Edmonton. Expected goals percentage of 4%.
Yeah.
Like there's been bad games here. And so it's not just about, hey, two assists against Calgary, goal and assist against Chicago. It is about something bigger. But even last night, there was, again, we use this term often with JT, and I'm usually okay with it, right? Because he's shown like how quality he can be. And to me, it's signs of someone who really cares.
Yeah.
But it doesn't get expressed very well. And the power play, even the power play goal, right? This is mid-second period. Elias Pettersson gets the team up ahead. But they had a really struggling power play for 30-some-odd seconds. And after 30 seconds, JT was like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
I'm skating off. You guys can deal with it. And sat at the end of the bench and in comes DeBrusk, and Connor Garland creates the goal for Elias Pettersson coming out of the corner. But even in that moment, I turned to Sad and was like, oh, that's odd. JT's usually quick to stay out there.
Anybody paying attention was like, what? JT's coming off that early in a power play?
Yeah. And I think after that, I'll bring it up here, but I think he only got four shifts after that.
Mm-hmm. The final shift was the power play in the third period where the Canucks got a man advantage for too many men on the ice from Nashville.
He didn't get a lot of usage.
No. And there were shifts where he was like under 20 seconds in the second period. Like it was just like he went out, did a twirl, went back to the bench.
Sorry, he got five shifts after the Pettersson goal.
So not many. And, you know, JT's clearly not feeling it right now. You know, you don't have to. He's not hiding from it. After the game against the Edmonton Oilers, you know, he says, I haven't been good enough. I need to be better. Does the piece with IMAC. Plays better against Calgary. But then Thursday night against the New York Islanders, he's back in front of the cameras and saying, I haven't been good enough. And he's really short with the media, being very literal with his answers. And that was an ugly game for every single Canuck. So it wasn't just JT Miller, but he hasn't been going. And there's definitely something that's going on, something that has kept him at less than 100% since the preseason. But if you're on the ice and you're a star player, there's still going to be expectations of you. Much like we've said with Elias Pettersson, it's like knee tendonitis. Sure, you're still on the ice. You're still playing every game. You're still playing 20 minutes a night. We still need you to be that guy, no matter what.
Be productive somewhere in some way. And, you know, the thing with JT is, like, there's been negative nights. Like, he's had a dash three.
Yeah.
Like, mind you, against the Oilers, but, like, there's been tough nights here. Mm-hmm. And the reason I brought the Pettersson example up is, like, there were nights where Pettersson, in the offensive zone, wasn't there. But defensively, taking care of everything.
Yeah. Well, and there were nights that Tocchet dialed his minutes back too.
Yeah.
Not to the same extent that we saw with Miller, but there were nights where Pettersson was among
low 16s.
Yeah, and he was among the lowest players at 5-on-5.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there were nights where Pettersson's minutes have gotten dialed back too. There wasn't a strict benching in the way that we just saw with JT Miller. And it's happened before with Miller. You know, when it happened last year, the Halloween game against Nashville, he took three
against
bad.
Nashville.
Yeah, it was against Nashville. He took three bad penalties, and then the coach sat him for the final five or so minutes of the second period. The Canucks had a power play, and JT didn't go out for the power play, and that's when you knew, like, okay, this is something going on here between Tocchet and JT if he's not going out for the power play after all the bad penalties he's taken here. And after the game, they really brushed it under the rug. They avoided the word benching like the plague, and they moved on from it. The other time was...
But that was also like what?
October 31st.
No, it was only like nine minutes
maybe. Yeah, it wasn't much. He ended up scoring in the third period, and he started the third period, was the first guy out on the ice. So they hashed it out over the intermission. We'll see if that happens again here. The other time was early in Tocchet's tenure against Seattle, and JT had a tough night, and he dialed his minutes back there. But other than that, I mean, we haven't really seen any coach, and why would you? He's been one of the best scorers in the league since coming to Vancouver. But Tocchet, and this is why I don't think it's just a JT problem. JT Miller has to be better. There's no question. Hasn't been good enough, especially since Brock Besser went out of the lineup. Producer Josh Elliott Wolf put out some great numbers on what that looks like and how poor the numbers have been for JT since Brock left the lineup. that's not enough of an excuse for JT to fall off a cliff with his production in the way that he has and his defensive play. But it does signify a bigger problem here with the team. That Tockett is not getting the same buy-in that he did last year and early in his tenure with the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, how many cards has he had to play already here as a coach, Bick? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's played the, you know, I'm apologizing to the fans for our play. He's played every kind of card you feel like he can play, and this is the latest one in the deck that he's going to, benching a star player, not only because the star player isn't playing up to their standard, but because he needs to find a way to get more buy-in from everybody in this group right now that's missing defensive assignments. Their play off the puck has been spotty at best, and that's Tockett's bigger issue here. It's not JT Miller. Mm-hmm. It's the whole team not playing off the puck to the same level that they did at any point last year.
And all that goes back to the I word, right? Identity.
Yeah.
If this team was built on defense last year, even if there's meant to be an evolution this year, you still need to maintain a certain level of credibility in your own zone. And it's gradually improved, and I do think it has improved from where we were on game one, but you see nights where they still look like they're searching.
Yeah.
And something like Zach LaRue can be wide open in a spot and easily get a goal.
Yeah.
Noah Juulsen the other game, not closing in, or not following the principles that they're supposed to, and getting too close on Lankinen or on Shelovs and not picking up Mikheyev the other game. That one goes in. It's stuff like that that was very evident that they cleaned it up so fast last year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I still have one of my favorite memories of last season was home opener, walking on the concourse in the first intermission. I had to go meet some friends. And a bunch of fans, you could just hear the chatter. Hey, they're playing real defense. This looks totally different from what we've seen in years past.
Mm-hmm.
And just the overall excitement from fans saying, this looks like credible hockey.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen that level of commitment in the defensive zone. I know some of the numbers look encouraging, and it's nice, and there are nights where it's like, okay, they kind of locked it down and inferior competition, all that, but it hasn't looked the same defensively as it did last year.
No. They've had an incredibly soft schedule to start this season. Like, let's be honest about it. They haven't played a lot of projected playoff teams, and in most of the ones that they have, they've looked like the second best team on the ice in those games. But there haven't been a ton of those. Right? Arguably, their best game of the season was the California finale in Los Angeles, where they looked like more of the team that we saw last year. Really tough to play against at 5-on-5 and making it difficult, making every inch of ice difficult for the opposition to get to. We haven't seen enough of that this year. Like, yeah, last night, I pointed it out on Twitter last night, and Blue Sky, by the way. But both, like, Nashville came into the game with a 7.5 shooting percentage in all situations, worst in the league. And last night they shot 20% when Lankinen was in net. So, yeah, that tells you, okay, maybe some things turned around for Nashville. But of the 20 shots that they had, how many were great opportunities?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, they didn't give up a ton, but the ones they did give up were really good. And they had the same problem against Chicago on Saturday. To a certain extent, they had a similar problem against the Calgary Flames last Tuesday in the win there. So this is something that has continued to happen more on home ice than it has away from home for whatever reason. But it speaks to a larger issue that they are not finding the buy-in that they had. And yes, it's not like they have a perfect roster either. But there are things off the puck, things that they did defensively with a lot of the same players that they had last year that they're just not doing right now. And probably the biggest signal of that is the Susi Meyers.
Yeah.
Where, like, in the spring and in the playoffs, they were good. There's a reason why when the Athletic put out their preseason piece being like, these are the best decors in all of hockey, and the Canucks were like tier two or tier three. It's because Susi and Meyers played really freaking well together last year. It's been the complete opposite so far this season. That continued last night. Tockett's admitting to it now that it's become an issue. He tried to switch up the D pairs. And so when I say, yeah, they're not getting enough buy-in, that needs to happen. But also some of the flaws on the roster are getting really exposed. We're getting past the point of it's early. Like, these problems aren't fixing themselves, and we're starting to reach that first checkpoint
yep.
of the season where you're like, okay, first 20 games, how are things looking? This is looking bad. And three games, even if they have three good games, it's not going to change all of what we saw through these first 17.
So I did an imperfect study last night.
I love it.
Sorry, this morning.
My favorite.
A rewatch, of course.
Yeah.
But I specifically wanted to track, because the first goal is entirely preventable, right? Tyler Myers starts the whole sequence by not moving the puck.
Something we've seen far too often this year.
Unencumbered, right? Like, easy exit. And so I tried to track every single defenseman's last night. Touches in the defensive zone, where they're somewhat under some pressure. Not like the D-to-D pass on a neutral zone regroup as you skate back in the D zone. Not those ones. But any play where a Predator player can make it tough, and do you make a positive play either to someone else who can advance the puck, or do you advance the puck?
Yeah.
So, like, this is fairly imperfect, but I just tracked this all, and I came out of this, everybody basically had a 50%, a coin flip proposition if they did something successful with the puck, except Quinn Hughes, who was closer to 80%. And that trended downwards late in the third, because he's trying to really push the tempo. But he was at above 80%, mm-hmm. and Myers gradually improved as the game went along, but it started really bad. But basically, everyone but Quinn Hughes was successful in moving the puck in pressure situations.
Yeah.
Carson Soucy, though, was below 40%.
Mm.
And it was bad all evening.
Yeah. I'm not sure what's happened with Soucy. Because
I wish it would be as easy as, like, the JT thing. As much as we're talking about body language and all these things,
yeah.
as you mentioned, hey, injury, that plays a role into it. It feels very obvious. Soucy's moving fine.
Yeah.
It's not as if there's been, you know, regular maintenance days or anything. That's something we've been keeping an eye on.
He's, and even beyond the puck moving, like, he's not boxing out. He's just not playing with the same type of, he's not playing the type of lockdown defense that we got accustomed to seeing last year. The way he defended the blue line was like one of the immediate things
yeah.
that stood out. And now they're just like conceding the blue line willingly far too often when he's out on the ice. And you top that off with some of the puck moving issues. And I get what Tockett's saying. Some of it is the connectivity with the forwards, but it can't all be that, you know, at some point, we've got to see better. And Soucy, more often than not, like when you watched him last year, what always stood out was just how calm he was, seemingly, with the puck. It's like his heart rate never really grew to a level that got him into trouble. And now there almost feels like there needs to be more urgency in his game with the way that he is playing or not really performing.
And I know the pairing is playing differently as far as who they're matched up against
mm-hmm.
this year during the regular season. Like, Ian Cole played a pretty big role last year. And
well, how much of it has to do with that, right? Is yeah. there, like, there's nobody else.
But there's certain elements. Like, yesterday, Soucy just skated up the right wall.
Yeah.
And Forsberg kind of chased him down easily, but he still had plenty of time to make a move.
Yeah.
He's make a decision. That's happened a lot this year.
Yeah.
That even, okay, you might be under duress and against, you know, the other team's best players, but once you get free and you're in space and you're clear, the decisions and the execution has to be cleaner. And right now for Carson Soucy, it looks labored. It looks struggled. And he's moving fine.
Yeah.
But, like, everything just feels muddy.
Well, and who else is taking the big-time defensive toughs on this roster?
I really think the Forbert omission here
yeah.
does have an accumulating effect.
Because you can't, you know, even if it was Forbert and Desharnais, let's say, like, you could still hand them some defensive zone faceoffs and let them really feed them to the wolves a little bit, and you expect them to be able to box out well and do some things in the defensive zone well, even if there is some other issues with that pair. We haven't seen it enough, really, and even in the minutes that we have, it hasn't played all that well. But Like, there's just nobody else. And I get it. Like, I'm at the point where it's like, okay, let's see what else Eric Brandstrom can handle. But am I expecting Eric Brandstrom to really be able to handle tough situations? His minutes have been incredibly sheltered so far. There's a reason why when you see him on the ice, he's playing a lot more in the offensive zone. He starts most of his shifts in the offensive zone if they don't happen on the fly. And he's getting matched up against, especially on home ice, against the other team's bottom six. He's getting favorable matchups, playing a little bit with Pettersson in that line that's really been able to drive play these last couple of games. So you're getting Brandstrom into really optimal situations for him to have success in, because you still are worried about his defensive game. At some point, he's playing so well, you want to see what it looks like if you increase that role. But when does that happen? When does Rick Tocchet reach that point?
How can you increase the role? Yeah. Like, what is the way to increase Brandstrom's role? Because he's already kind of maxing out on offensive zone starts.
Yeah.
Are you going to take away more zone starts away from Quinn Hughes and Philip Hronek? Mm-hmm. No.
No.
So where are you going to play Brandstrom more? In the defensive zone. So, okay, like we can have the conversation of, hey, get Brandstrom more minutes.
Can you play him and Quinn more together and move Hronek somewhere else?
Honestly, if you're going to break up Hughes and Hronek, I would go Brandstrom-Hronek.
Mm-hmm.
Like, try to create the most credible copy of Quinn Hughes. Because I don't think Susie Hronek is a pair I want to see too frequently right now.
The other issue is, who do you play with Hughes at that point?
100%.
Yeah.
The numbers with Myers and Hughes, surprisingly, like,
they always look good.
They always look good, but it always feels like such a weird fit.
They always look fantastic. It's super high event, always.
They usually don't go to it unless they're trailing in games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like that to me is a moment where the numbers kind of lie.
Yeah.
I think in previous seasons, they've had like a 65% shot share or a really nice expected goals share, but it's situationally used when they're trailing, and they also can be very, very high event themselves.
And if you're going Brandstrom-Hronek, you probably have to go more heavy on defensive starts for Hughes and Myers.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, do you want Hughes starting in the defensive zone that much?
And by the way, not for nothing, over 2 on the penalty kill last night.
Yeah.
No Vinny DeHernay.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just drop that little nugget. Because his defensive numbers on the PK have actually been decent.
JT Miller might have had something to do with that, too. Certainly on the second goal.
Well, certainly on the second goal.
Well, I mean, the second goal was a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. But, you know, JT was, and that was one of his last shifts as well. He was doing the thing where, you know, he's trying to do the jobs of his teammates and then not doing his own job.
Yeah.
And that becomes a problem.
You know what's funny, too, is he was kind of right.
Yeah,
because I didn't hear it live in the arena because there's a lot of noise. But on the TV copy, we were watching it. I could hear the Petey, Petey, and he was right.
Yeah,
because Pettersson crept too close to Forsberg in the bumper. Forsberg was never shooting.
Yeah,
and so suddenly now Pettersson's got to shoulder check and see where Stamkos is. It's too late. The puck goes right by him.
Yeah,
so he was technically right, but it's glass houses.
Yes,
when you're not moving yourself, dude, you shouldn't be shouting at other people.
You're trying to do somebody else's job and didn't do your own. So that can be an issue. All right, the Canucks Central roundup. Quickly here before we get to Don Taylor on Canucks Central. More reports that Demko's return is imminent. I mean, we've kind of been on this since he got into full practices. It's sort of day-to-day-ish. It really depends on Thatcher Demko being like, okay, I think I'm ready. And it feels like we're starting to get to that stage with Demko, but still unlikely that we'll see him tomorrow night.
Moving into the final 2 weeks of November, right?
Yep.
This was always kind of a expected and still kind of hopeful timeline at some point, but here we are.
Pittsburgh writer Josh Yoey linking the Canucks and Oilers to pending UFA defenseman with the Penguins, Marcus Pettersson. No surprise there. Jim Rutherford acquired Pettersson from the Anaheim Ducks, I believe it was, when he was the GM.
Is that a Daniel Sprong trade?
It might have been a Daniel Sprong trade. We'll have to look that one up. And Elliot Friedman on Donnie and Dolly earlier today reiterated that the Canucks will address the defense. It's just a matter of when and not if. All right, Don Taylor is going to join us. Donnie and Dolly, the legend himself, is coming up next on Sportsnet 650.
The most opinionated Canucks show out there. Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.